Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today's episode is sponsored by BetBright. My name is Thomas Rooney and I'm delighted to be joined by Peter Welch from BetBright. How's it going, mate?
Well, there, guys. How are you? Good to be here again.
It's good to have you here. And just a reminder, with BetBright, you can deposit 20 and play with 70 when you sign up today. Once again, I'm joined by Mohammed Butt, the chief writer at Squawker. How's it going, mate?
It's going great, Tom. Good to have you back, mate.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, hasn't it?
It has been.
Much been going on?
Just some transfers, you know, post World Cup, you know, transfer fun. How about yourself, mate? What are you about to
do? I've been moving house, so I've no idea what's going on in the football world, but I'm going to ask the questions and you guys give the answers. Is how it works, so it's all good. And we've also got Jake Entwistle, the assistant editor at Squawker. How's it going, Jake?
Yep, good. Good to have you back as well. And I said, you answer the questions, as you said, and we'll fill you in with everything that's happened, hopefully.
I'm going to listen back to this on my journey home as well, just so I know exactly what's going on.
To double up.
In the football world and in the betting world as well. We're going to start by going to look at the big six in the Premier League. Obviously, it starts this weekend. Friday night, I think, is the first game. We're going to start by talking about last season's champions, Manchester City. I don't know who wants to take this first, but like, how on earth does he make Manchester City better? Because obviously it's probably a case of other teams need to really improve if they're going to get anywhere near them. But can Pep improve Manchester City?
You heard Mo clear his throat there.
Yeah, I was ready.
I
was like, who wants to take this? And I saw Mo prepare himself.
Yeah, you can always improve. That's the thing. You can always improve. When he was at Barcelona, he won the treble in his first season and managed to make Barca a better team the next season. They weren't more exciting necessarily, but they were better. They got 99 points, won La Liga in one of the most grueling title races ever, 99-96. And then he got them, made them better the next season as well. And then the fourth season, even then they improved in a tactical sense. They didn't improve in the trophy sense because a general fatigue of constant winning for 3 years, you know, and also injury to David Villa really sort of handicapped them. And illness to Eric Abidal. Basically, those two major injuries derailed in the fourth season. Otherwise, probably would have gotten even better again. Bayern Munich, again, he's always looking to improve. And again, he'll have got an idea of how he can improve City. So one thing immediately was seen, right, is they needed to have some sort of winger depth, right? Because Bernardo Silva is a great player, but Bernardo Silva is a different kind of player to Sterling and Sané. He's not as quick as them. He's more intricate, more tricky. It's like, you know, if you were a cleverer kind of player, if you want to put it that way, but that's kind of doing them a disservice because they're doesn't mean they're not clever. But he's a very canny sort of operator in a sort of David Silva mold. And I think what they've done is they've bought Riyad Mahrez, who is very much grown man, Premier League winner, great dribbler, more in line with Sané and Sterling in terms of the way he plays football. So now they've got these three genuinely brilliant wingers, all of them. Exceptional, and now they can move Bernardo Silva infield to where David Silva played. And I think one of the problems they had last season was David Silva, when he wasn't there, of course he wasn't there for his son was ill, missed a large stretch of the season, and just in general he's getting older and he's not as good as he used to be. Now they've got literally, I mean, the guy's got the same name, you know, he's and as we saw in the Community Shield, he slots into that role perfectly,
wasn't he?
So what we'll see now is we'll see more of Bernardo Silva in there. So he's replenished the squad without actually replenishing. And also, because Benjamin Mendy missed last season, it's like, oh, they've just signed the world-class left-back. You know, they signed him last year, but now they actually get to integrate him into the team. So already you can see three big improvements. The one thing which I think is a big problem for them, or something we should all be aware of, is they didn't sign a defensive midfielder. They needed one. They really needed one. Fernandinho's 33 years old. He's not really going to be able to... it'd be very surprising if he handled him... The challenge of retaining the title as well as he did challenge of winning the title. They needed someone there. They wanted Fred, missed out on him. Wanted Jorginho, missed out on him. Now Guardiola was saying there's no point signing anyone because there's no genuinely exceptional person on the market. And he's talking about, I might use John Stones there. We might see Delph there. There's lots of different options for them. How they cope with that is going to be very interesting. But otherwise, you can see what the result is. You make small tweaks to the team. You make small tactical adjustments. So maybe, I don't know what they'll be with this team. Because, I mean, you know, with other teams, he's changed formation slightly every year. Changed it a little bit. Mixed it up a bit. Who knows? Maybe now that he's signed Mahrez, maybe we'll see Sterling at false nine a bit more. I don't know. There's plenty of ways that he can evolve. And I think we've already seen slight ones. There could be more to come tactically.
Yeah, Jake, do you kind of agree with that? And do you think it's a case of, I mean, I've got here 2012, 2013, 2017, the only domestic years he hasn't won a domestic title, and one of those he was on sabbatical. So he is a title winner, and do you think he'll...
I don't think 2018 will be added to that either. I think they will win it this year because, as they haven't needed a strong transfer window to sort of strengthen, as Mo said about Benjamin Mendy coming back. Pep Guardiola has already said that 3-5-2 might become an option now.
Yep.
They've got three quality centre-backs they can play, four quality centre-backs, but they could play a back three of John Stones, Otamendi and Laporte, which is pretty strong and probably better than most other defences in Europe anyway. That gives Benjamin Mendy the licence to be the left wing back marauding forward. We saw him in the Community Shield, just these lung-busting runs to overlap that opens up so much space. And as good as Delph was coming inside and playing that sort of false centre midfield role as a left back, when they have Mendy, they've got someone that can literally charge from one end of the pitch to the other, blow past everyone in his way, and then Benjamin Mendy is one of the best low crossers in Europe, and we didn't see that because he didn't play. Man City last season, a lot of their goals were cutbacks, pullbacks. Yep. Sané was responsible for a lot of them, getting 15 assists. Now they've got someone when Sané isn't fit, or they want to invert Sané onto the right, give a new dimension. They've got Benjamin Mendy, who's going to be just firing in these low crosses, and people like Aguero, Gabriel Jesus.
Aguero's going to enjoy that, isn't he?
They'll just gobble those up. And a lot of Aguero's goals, obviously he's scored 200 now for Man City. I was watching back on the resource, and a lot of them are from the wide areas. He thrives on people getting to the byline, cutting it back, and then his movement, that explosive lean one way, go the other to fire it home is scary. And Man City last season were the only team in Europe's top five leagues to be top three for goals scored and top three for fewest goals conceded. So in terms of improvement, the bars they've set are extremely high, and I don't think they're going to improve statistically. But as Mo said, there are already things are already in the works to make them a better team for longer. And Mo mentioned Bernardo Silva coming in as a number eight in midfield, which looks a masterstroke. He was brilliant in the Community Shield. And then when they eventually move him on, they've got Phil Foden, who can then do that number eight as well.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Pep said he's very much part of the first team picture.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. And he proved he can play. Like Chelsea's midfield wasn't bad. There were a couple of times when Barkley was like, "I'm four times the size of you. I'm going to wrestle you off." But there are other times when Phil Foden went, "I'm just going to literally tiptoe around you," and then set up Aguero. So he's definitely ready, and they've got players now where they haven't signed many players, but you look at their squad and you think, wow, that's a seriously strong squad, apart from that one holding midfield role. But Gundogan stepped in and was decent there. So it's not going to be huge, but it's definitely the one area.
Yeah, I would say that's the thing. The emergence of Phil Foden actually is really, it's quite a game changer, because last season they kind of had to ride Kevin De Bruyne and the whole way, because it's like, I mean, he's their best player. He's probably the best player in the league, but they couldn't rest him really at all, because when they did, they just looked very poor. And I think I'm not saying Foden is good as Kevin De Bruyne, but what he gives them is the option to, okay, we don't have to play Kevin De Bruyne every single game. If we're playing the bottom five sides in the Premier League at home, maybe we can rest Kevin De Bruyne. Maybe we can. And no, and now what they have is, before they had, it was De Bruyne and Silva, David Silva, were their two free eights, right? That was their midfield. Their backups were nowhere near that level. Now they have, because they've signed Mahrez, now they effectively have, you could start Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva, and then have David Silva and Phil Foden, and you've got two sets of free eights there. And that's some great depth. That's really the ability to either to pick between Bernardo Silva or David Silva to start in central midfield next to Kevin De Bruyne is huge, because the rotation is the biggest thing to retaining the title and to challenging on two fronts, right? Being able to manage your squad effectively, having options, having depth. And City now have that at all areas except defensive midfield. Now, they're basically hoping for Gundogan to stay fit the whole season. If he does, okay, maybe they'll get away with it, but it's always a big ask asking him to stay fit.
Absolutely. And Peter, I'm obviously assuming they're massive favourites in the outright markets for the Premier League title. And do you think anyone can stop them?
Yeah, well, yeah, as you say, Man City are short price favourites, 4-6 to retain the league. I think that's rightly so based on the football we saw them play last season. Well, you've obviously got Liverpool there at 4-1, their second favourites. And again, rightly so, as you mentioned, squad depth there. Liverpool clearly have that with the signings they've made. I go back to the question of you sort of made, asking whether they're going to be made better. I think it's almost impossible. And if you're nitpicking, I think, I don't know about better, but I think more, I don't like to use the word clinical, but you know, I think they want to make themselves a truly great side. They need to this season sort of stamp out the sort of dots on the copybook, so that, you know, like a 0-0 against Huddersfield, losing 3-2 against United at home, I think they'd want to stamp that out. Losing 4-3 to Liverpool again, and I think they had an early exit in the FA Cup as well. So I think the thing for Pep this season in Man City is to kind of establish themselves as a truly great side. You know, obviously last year the football we saw them play was exceptional. I think they'll continue to do that again with the depth they have on their side. I think they'll go on to win the league. I think 4-6 is a fair price. So I think they'd also be looking to have a really strong season in the Champions League. Now, obviously, we're talking about Premier League here, which gets underway in just a few days' time. But I think in terms of getting better or improving, they'd want to sort of establish themselves in the history books this season. I think they can do that by sort of wiping the floor with the Premier League and hopefully for them sort of going on a real sort of a strong European campaign, and which season gets to, I'd say, at least semi-finals, if not final. I think there's a status all before that sort of five of the last seven European campaigns, they didn't get past the last 16. You might want to double check that, but I think that's something they need to bear in mind. That's something that Pep will be aware of as well. So, yeah, 4-6 favourites to the Premier League. I think that's fair enough. And I think they'd like to sort of go unbeaten if they can.
Yeah, so kind of the Premier League maybe is their bread and butter, but they want another trophy alongside that potentially. But just moving on slightly, you mentioned Liverpool there. Don't know what the guys think. Most people are saying they're probably the main rivals, the most set up to maybe challenge Manchester City, certainly in the early parts of the season, till we kind of know what's going on in other competitions and such. But what's the minimum expectation for Klopp's men? Because they spent a lot of money. They got the Champions League final last year, so they're not like the kind of the unknowns or the surprise package anymore. They are. Yeah. They need to be a force again in the Premier League and challenge for that title, don't they, mate?
Yeah, I think the amount of money they spent sort of necessitates they do very well. They have to mount a serious title challenge. And it's not enough just to be like Man United, the best of the rest. I think they actually have to challenge City for the title. I don't think they don't have to win it necessarily because City are that good, but they have to really give City a run for the money, and they have to win a cup. They haven't won a trophy in I don't know how long now. It's been a long time. They need to win a trophy, win one of the domestic cups, and they need to get to the Champions League semi-finals again. The thing is, I'm actually more confident in their ability to win the Champions League than I am for them to win the Premier League. Because I just think Jurgen Klopp's style of football, without a 6-week, in a 20-team league, without a 6-week winter break like he has in the Bundesliga, I just think maybe it's a bit too demanding. Even though they've improved their squad and everything. I think they can definitely make the Champions League final again. Honestly, I do think so. I think they're a fantastic cup side, and I think they should. But they should also be looking at winning. I know Klopp doesn't take it seriously, but they should be looking at winning a domestic cup.
Yeah, they should.
If not both of them, frankly, because they're the best cup side in the country, right? Along with Man United, who are a different kind of cup side, but they're the best cup side in the country. Those are two cups that are available. It's in the League Cup. It's available early as well. You can win it, get out of the way, give your team a big boost. Liverpool need to win some silverware, man. It's all well and good playing this beautiful football, but you know, you're not Spurs. You want to win something. So, yeah, I think they need to focus on winning some cups and getting far in the Champions League again.
I think he's brought in players now which not only make their sort of first 11 stronger, but now they can rest players and have a good team in the cups and stuff. Obviously, Daniel Sturridge last season was injured so they couldn't rely on him, so it was like, we have to play at least Firmino or Mane in a cup game. But Sturridge this pre-season has looked so good. If he stays fit, then they'll easily win a cup, because he's a match winner in himself. Like, again, if you throw it back to that season he had with Suarez, he's obviously not at that level now in terms of his athletic capability because of the injuries
4 years ago as well, isn't it?
But he's an incredible player, and he's like an even falser nine than Firmino now. Obviously, Firmino carries that sort of hassling and that dynamic approach, and Sturridge maybe doesn't have that, but Sturridge is so creative and so good in the final third that he could lead a cup team for Liverpool, an FA Cup team, and you'd expect them to get to the final, especially if you put Jadon Sancho in that as well. And then you've got some really exciting young players coming through. Curtis Jones has looked great in pre-season. They've bought new midfielders so they can have like a Wijnaldum in centre midfield with Henderson, and then you rotate the Keita Fabinho and stuff like that, with Lallana still there. So now I think they've got a squad that is capable of mounting challenges on all fronts, and maybe that's what they didn't have last season, so that's why Klopp discarded it immediately. But I agree completely that they've spent a lot of money, and obviously it's net spend, etc. like this. They had the money to spend, but they've invested it very, very well in high profile players. So to say that there isn't an expectation for them to challenge Man City would be quite odd, in my opinion, because you can't just say, oh, the money was there was still Liverpool. Like, you want to be expectant. You Liverpool fans should say, Klopp, we've got to finish second with this squad now. It is the second best in the league, arguably. Let's get to the Champions League semi-final again. Let's win a cup and let's push Man City close.
Yeah.
And then build on that again. Because there's no point having all these spendings, being fourth and being like, oh, we still need to build. Make the foundations for it now.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be a treble season just because you've spent 150 million. No. It doesn't have to be a treble winning season now, but show that you maybe might be able to do that in the future.
I think Sturridge is a really interesting case, because 2 years ago, Sturridge didn't look like... He thought it looked like there was no way he was going to fit in with Jurgen Klopp's style of football. He just didn't seem to... He didn't seem to get it. The football was too... was passing him by. And I think what happened last season with Mohamed Salah and Roberto Firmino and Sadio Mane was that they've developed a system now where you can put Sturridge in that team, mm. and actually he's really good. He looked, it's pre-season, but he's looked like, not just that he's looked good, Sturridge can always look good, he's that kind of player. He's looked like he gets the system now. It's that, that's what's impressive, is that he looks so comfortable in the way Liverpool play. And because that's because the way Liverpool play has changed a little bit, not massively, but a little bit. The way they use their forwards has changed a little bit. It's more participative and associative, whereas before it was just sort of like they needed a striker that scored goals and Sturridge was kind of that guy. And also the addition of Shaqiri, I think, is really good, because Shaqiri, like Sturridge, is a left-footed maverick, and I think Sturridge gets him, if that makes any sense. I think you can see already they've struck up something of similar a relationship, well, it seems to be anyway, to the way that Sturridge and Suarez got each other on the pitch. You know, they just understand how to play together. And I think the key guy there that Jake mentioned is Lallana. Being able to use him as a backup, because I don't think he makes their...
Yeah, you can't rely on him.
I don't think he makes their first team. I don't think they should push him to be in their first team. I think he's the kind of... He's so good. I think you bring him in every three games and you play him, and he'll do you a really good job. And in the cups, obviously, you put him in there with the kids, with the youngsters who need a bit of guidance. I think he could do wonders, really.
The one player that I think has actually unlocked Sturridge is Naby Keita.
Yeah.
Because when you play Firmino, you know you're going to get the running and the goals from your forward. When Sturridge plays, you might not get the running, but you've got that heightened creativity, the even greater goal-scoring sort of knack, as you will. And then what you've got now is a centre midfielder that can appear in both boxes within a split second. So you almost... Obviously, Naby Keita is going to play with Firmino, and that's why Liverpool's first 11 is petrifying.
Mm.
But when Sturridge plays, if Keita plays as well... Sturridge, as I said, is dropping even deeper than Firmino does, and that allows Salah to come in from the right, that allows Mane to come in from the left and be sort of centre forwards in itself. But then even if they stay wide, you've got little Naby, Deco, Keita running through the middle and ending up in the box. And because Sturridge is so brilliant at football, Sturridge can find that pass, which again is... So in some ways it's weird, because they've concocted loads of... They've replaced Coutinho potentially in lots of different ways. Obviously, it would have been great to add Nabil Fekir as a sort of direct, like, here's a number eight that creates and crosses the ball well. Done. But now that Klopp, I think, has found some other solutions. You play Sturridge to drop so deep that he becomes a 10, and then you rely on your midfield runners and your wingers to become the forwards. And it's really interesting to watch. And obviously, it is pre-season, but I feel like they've developed slightly different ways to handle sort of deep blocks.
Absolutely. For me, it's like they're looking at their options on the Champions League final on the bench. Now you've got Lallana fit again, you've got Sturridge in form, and you've got Shaqiri as well. So just their squad, Peter, is just a lot stronger than it was last season, isn't it? And do you think they've maybe had the best transfer window of everyone? They've spent more than anyone, but do you think they've done well?
Yeah, exactly as you said, they've spent the money. So I think you're right. I think the Liverpool fans will be... Will they be expecting to win the league? I don't know. Will they be hopeful? Absolutely. I think there's the right amount of positive pressure on Jurgen Klopp this season. And I think, they'll be expected to absolutely be competing with Man City. It's not going to be a one-horse race this season. The Liverpool fans will hope that if they don't win, they'll be pushing them right to the line. I think also it'll be interesting to see how much time Jurgen Klopp is given if results don't go their way. Now, I know it's a bit probably very premature. I think they'll have a strong campaign, but at the same time, it'll be interesting to see how patient Liverpool will be if it does end up being a one-horse race again. I think you're right in terms... I think it was Mo who touched there on the Champions League. I think we'll definitely see them have a very strong European campaign again. And I think the bare minimum for Jurgen Klopp this season is an FA Cup or a League Cup.
Yeah, I agree.
4-1 Premier League, I think, is a fair price, bearing in mind how good Man City were last season. And I touched on that earlier on. 4-1 for the Premier League, I think, is fair. But I think bare minimum for Liverpool this season is an FA Cup or a League Cup. And if they don't win silverware this season, it'll be a very disappointing season for them. I think the Liverpool fans are expecting a lot from this team this season.
To say that then Klopp needs to get the final hoodoo off his back as well, doesn't he? So definitely they need some silverware,
100%. Yeah, that's it as well. It's like, because the thing is, it's that what, I can't remember who it was, said about Spain. It said once Spain win one trophy, they're never going to stop winning. And then they won the year 2008, won three trophies in a row. It's that thing, it's Klopp can't win finals. I mean, it's obviously preposterous. He did it with Dortmund, for goodness sake. He was smashed by
Bayern. Something he needs to just...
But that was a long time ago. That was like 7 years ago, 2011.
Yeah, he's lost his last six.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, he needs a win. And I think once he gets a win, because the thing is, it's not even, I think at this point, it's not even about process or tactics. It's just the fact that Klopp doesn't win finals and he's been unlucky and made some mistakes in a few. He wins one final and everything's going to change. And everyone will, but, and he'll have a trophy, and people really underestimate how important trophies are to people. Trophies are to teams, to players, how they just invigorate you and make you feel like, you know, this is worth it.
I suppose perhaps the League Cup's the one to target to get out of the way. That'd be great for them, wouldn't it?
That to me makes the most sense as well, purely because, usually only one or two of the big Premier League sides end up in the semis, and the semis are two legs, which again, two-legged affairs for Klopp's Liverpool side, I think that's perfect. I think it, more so than any, probably any other team in England, I think his team is set up to play over two legs.
Well, he saw against Man City, didn't he, in Champions League.
Exactly, and I mean, a game at Anfield, forget about it. I mean, to me, night game at Anfield, I mean, you got to go for the League Cup. For the League Cup, go for the Champions League, try to attack in the league. I mean, it's funny because, you know, they're not going to have Oxlade-Chamberlain for the whole season, but essentially their starting midfield from last year could now be their backup midfield.
That's the main point.
That's like Jay says, being able to rotate and have actual quality to call on. That's very huge. Klopp's always had trouble rotating, but then has he ever really had the options? Not really. So let's see how he handles it, because if he gets it right, this could be very impressive for Liverpool. It's going to be a very big season for Liverpool.
Absolutely, and just, I mean, from a team that spent a lot to a team that spent absolutely nothing in Tottenham. I want to talk about sort of the North London kind of who's on top at the moment type thing, because at the moment we used to talk about, are Spurs going to overtake Arsenal? Now it's kind of the other way around. So do you think Arsenal are in a better shape? Jake's probably a good person to come to for this. Do you think Arsenal are primed to overtake Spurs, who have maybe stood still a little bit? Or
no. Arsenal still have gaping holes in their squad, and that's why Spurs find it so hard to sign players, because they don't really have any in their first 11 at least. So Arsenal at the moment, when you look at their front four, you think, oh my god, this team's going to be good, and you get further and further back and you think, oh my god, this team's going to be bad. So with Spurs, you can look at their back four and think, wow, that's pretty good. You look at their midfield and think, yep, that's strong. And then you've got Harry Kane up front, which is Harry Kane. So that's why Spurs, I feel sorry for Pochettino, because he hasn't got the backing, or Levy's model is not to just spend lots of money, and obviously they've got that new stadium, so that's probably even more restricted. So they can't buy a backup for 50 million, because that doesn't make any financial sense to anyone at the club. So then they buy backups for 25 that are worth 5. It impacts them. So that's why they've not got any depth, because their first 11 is so strong. It's like, who do I sign to back them? Who's happy to back them up? Because the thing is with Spurs is, because they're still Spurs, and I'm not trying to make this in a negative way, it's like, what we've seen with Liverpool this season is getting to a Champions League final has sort of made them more attractive again. Whereas I think Spurs are still just...
not quite there, are they?
Not becoming there. And Eriksen was speaking about, like, the fact that 9 players were in the World Cup semi-finals from Spurs proves that you can be a good player and come to Tottenham. And there wasn't a cry for help, that was the wrong word, but it's more of like, guys, we're quite good. Like, you should want to play here. And I feel sorry for them in that respect, because they are brilliant. They've got a fantastic manager. They've got some fantastic individual players. And this is why I don't think they will easily finish above Arsenal, because Arsenal have fantastic players, but they've got a new manager and their back four is rubbish. Shambolic is the word I was going to say. So Arsenal have these two massive gaps, and even in pre-season they've conceded a lot of chances. They haven't actually lost in normal time, but they should have in quite a few of the games. So I don't think Spurs are in any danger of being overtaken by Arsenal. but they're in danger of falling off from Liverpool and Man City.
Yeah.
So they're going to find themselves cast away in this sort of third place island where they're obviously very good, but how do they get better? And at the moment, they haven't got the financial backing or the sort of... If they get to a Champions League final or win a cup this year, then things will change. It's like, right, Harry Kane's there, Christian Eriksen's there, Dele Alli's only going to get better. I want to join this club. But at the moment, they're on the fringes, but they're still so much better than a lot of other teams.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is, they could have... Say if they'd sold Kane for, like, 100 million and then brought five players, everyone would be like, Spurs are signing loads of players, but surely it's better that they're keeping this squad together.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, look, I think it's great... The problem is, like Jake says, right, it's hard for them to sign players. Not even so much because it's like they can't sign backups. Like, ideally speaking, to progress, like Liverpool did, you sign someone to displace a current starter, make them a backup, and thereby you improve as well, because then your former starter is your backup. But the thing is, Spurs can't really compete at the top end of the market because the wage structure is so restrictive. And that's the big thing that no one wants to talk about. Spurs don't sign top players because top players don't want to earn that kind of money. Like, the players that they have, they've developed because they came in at low wages because they weren't necessarily big names. Pochettino has worked miracles, made them into superstars, and the ones that still accept buying into the low wages, that's, I mean, again, relatively low wages compared to other top level footballers, Tottenham players obviously still earn a massive amount of money in terms of normal people, but in terms of footballers, they're very, very much underpaid. And I think you've seen that with Walker. He's not happy with that. He left. You see, Rose has issued, basically complained about it, didn't play for an entire season. You know, got signed aside. I mean, I know that part of that was injury and part of that was his mental health, but he was clearly not pushed back into things by Poch. And then Toby Alderweireld, the best defender in the Premier League, basically sidelined because he didn't want to sign a new contract, doesn't want to sign a new contract because, again, he wants to be paid his worth. So every now and again, you get players breaking away from it. But as long as Harry Kane is willing to, I mean, toe the line.
He's the key, isn't he?
I mean, they doubled it though, didn't they? That was one big step.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, is that now, I mean, does Dele Alli now then demand, are you going to pay me that as well? Is Christian Eriksen going to demand that? And, you know, right now, as it stands, they're fine. They keep this team together. But the thing is, they're basically at the limits of what they can achieve with this team. They should have won the league in 15-16. They were the best team in the league. Over the entire season, you could argue maybe they're more consistent than Chelsea in the next season, but Chelsea were brilliant in that season. But they should have won the league in 15-16. They were the best team by far in the league.
Yeah, and that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then suddenly they're league winners. Then suddenly Levy can actually loot in the purse strings, but they've got a whole new revenue stream and everything. But as it is, they're still Spurs. They're Pochettino's working miracles to keep them where they are. They're punching way above their weight. But financially, they can't compete. This is the thing. And until they start paying top players what they want, top wages for top players, they're not going to be able to really take the next step, because as Jake says, you can't sign backups. For signing backups is always tricky, because it's you know, I mean, you don't want to sign a player that isn't good enough to play for your first team, but then like
you need to sign someone.
You need to sign someone. Who do you sign? You sign someone that isn't as good as your starters, then they're just not as good as your starters and they don't play that much. So it's like, what was the point of even wasting money? Barcelona, for example, have wasted hundreds of millions on signing backups the last few years, because it's like, oh, we need backups. Well, then you don't sign backups. You sign either young players who can develop or players who will displace your current starters. And so Spurs don't want to get into that habit of signing backups, because it is just basically throwing money.
I think they've done that. And what's positive about... It's not positive because they haven't done it yet, but what's positive about the players they're linked with this summer is that they are young and they have extremely high ceilings. Jack Grealish obviously was brilliant in the Championship last season, played Aston Villa's first game, got an assist, looks a really dynamic midfielder that will only get better, especially under someone like Pochettino. They've been linked with Stanislav Lobotka from Celta Vigo, who is sort of... If they need to replace Moussa Dembele, then this Lobotka guy was sort of the absolute king at keeping the ball in terms of like pass success, 80%, and take-ons as well. And what Dembele's famous for is being able to just glide past a player. And in La Liga last season, 114 players completed 25 dribbles. And Lobotka's success rate was the highest at 91.67. Right. So he rarely gets tackled, and that's the midfielder they need to offset someone like Christian Eriksen. And then they're finally linked with someone from Lyon called Tanguy Ndombele. And he, again, is just a brilliant dynamic midfielder, box to box. Great at carrying the ball, which is the one thing they lack in their midfield. So The targets that are being rumoured to be identified by Tottenham are really positive. If they can sign two of those midfielders, then I would actually think they're in a brilliant place to again build on on somehow, as Mo said, the success, which is overachievement. And I feel they get a hard... It's weird saying it as sort of an Arsenal fan, but in terms from a purely objective stance, it's really odd the way people perceive Spurs, because they play brilliant football, they've got brilliant players, and they're just lacking that one. As we just said with Liverpool, they win one trophy, then everyone's going to like get off their back.
Do you know what it is? I think with Spurs is they've been so good for so long, we just take it for granted now. But the thing is, you see, a good example is in La Liga, right? You see these teams every now and again that come up, like Celta did it a decade ago, Villarreal, little teams that punch above their weight and they finish fourth one season, maybe two seasons, and it's a huge, everyone's like, wow, amazing. And then they fall back eventually because they have to go in cycles of boom and bust because they can't sustain it because they don't have the money. Spurs, financially, I mean, it's not quite as big as the La Liga thing, but Spurs don't have the kind of money that Man United have, Chelsea have, Tottenham have. That Arsenal have, sorry, even Arsenal really, and they've sustained it. 15-6, they've been up there constantly for the last three seasons, and like that's really impressive. And it's just like Jake says, the players they're linked with, very impressive. You know, they could really improve Spurs if they come in, because they're young and they'll be backups, but they're young, so then Pochettino can develop them and then eventually replace the current starters. That's how you do it. You can't just sign pure backups. It doesn't really work that well. Like Soldado, and
Paulinho.
Or Llorente, or you know, players like that. It's like they're not as good as your starters. Well, that's because they're not as good as your starters. And when you play them, because Spurs also, the other thing is they can't, with their style of football, you can't really drop a level. If you play with any sort without intensity, you're just, this was rubbish. They need to play with intensity the whole time, which is part of why they tend to struggle when physically they're not at it. But I just think Spurs, it's almost like he's taken them as far as they can, barring some miracle of performance, leaping performance from Dele Alli or something, like where he just starts banging in 2020.
He'd have to get 2020 to.
If he turns into like a Platini or something, Platini reincarnate, you're 20 goals, 20 assists, then Spurs could elevate. Otherwise, they're going to struggle to really sort of move further without any investment. But they are ahead of Arsenal purely. I mean, I love what Arsenal have done this summer in terms of attack. I think the way they're going to be so much fun to watch this season.
Absolutely.
I think they're going to be great fun to watch. But it's just like Jake says, their defensive signings. They're signing a whole bunch of secondary defenders who are all very passionate guys, very physical guys. But none of them are leaders. None of them are organisers. And Bernd Leno.
It's not even that. None of them are great defenders. Leno's been picked because he's the one goalkeeper Arsenal have now that can pass the ball.
Yeah.
So that's why he's in the team. The problem with Arsenal is that they have the potential to score 90 goals this season, but they've got the potential to concede 80. So that's why they're going to be fun to watch, because it was only a friendly, but against Chelsea, Danny Drinkwater was breaking lines. He was a six at Leicester, just pumping long balls to Jamie Vardy, like pinpoint precision there. He was doing line breaking, offside track breaking runs against Arsenal, and that to me is warning signs. Obviously, that's going to come with a new manager, but yeah, that's why I don't think Arsenal will challenge Spurs directly, because there's still too many holes, despite the fact that Aubameyang and Lacazette could be. Incredible.
Yeah. One last thing on Arsenal. I think they hired Unai Emery because they want to win the Europa League, because that's the easiest way to get back into the Champions League for them, given that the challenges in the league, as Jake said. So, and I think they'll win the Europa League. I think he's the guy to do that. I think they've got a great cup team that could go on a cup run. I think they could fire their way to the Europa League. I think that's what they're going to do.
So you don't have trophies for all these teams to go around, is there? Everyone needs a trophy.
Don't worry. These next ones won't win.
Just Peter, on Arsenal and Tottenham, I presume they're both obviously in the running for top four, is kind of the main market people look at for those two.
Exactly. Tottenham 4-5 to finish in the top four, 14-1 for the Premier League outright, which obviously, as you mentioned, is probably a bit above them at the moment. I'm beginning to sound like a bit like a broken record here, but I still can't believe that Arsenal are 25-1. To win the Premier League outright. Again, that was my contrary to your picking in the holes of the defences there. That'd be my bet for an each way finish. If you fancy a bit of a long punt, but I think the bet actually for Arsenal before the Premier League kicks off is for them to finish in the top four, and they're 2-1 there. Obviously, they've got a new manager. They've made some decent signings early in the summer. Obviously, there are question marks about the defence, but you also got to bear in mind that Aubameyang and Lacazette are in there as well, as well as Mesut Ozil, who's obviously, I think he's summered well. I think he's got a good season ahead of him, especially with someone who's got a point to prove as well. So I'll be back in Arsenal at 2-1 division in the top four. And I think also something we've got to bear in mind as well is Spurs moving to their new stadium. Now, time will only tell whether they struggle or they settle in nicely. But it is a fact you have to weigh up. I think they've also done well to keep some of their top-class young players who in previous eras may have been sold off at the right price. But as you say, it is notable that they've not made any sort of marquee signings just yet. So I'd actually say that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal finish above Spurs this season. As you say, time will only tell, but it's set to look an interesting job between the two North London sides.
Absolutely, it's good to have that rivalry kind of, you know, on the level pegging and sort of targeting the same things, really. It'll make the North London derbies all the more interesting. But I'm going to move on to the last two of the big six. I'm going to give Mo and Jake sort of a minute or so on each one in terms of, right. I know Mo, you'd probably want 25 minutes on but so Manchester United and Chelsea are probably the two that are in the biggest trouble in terms of like how they're going to set up, what the transfer dealing is going to be between now and deadline day. Probably are they both at risk of slipping out of the top four? Maybe not, but you know, they're the two that have got a lot to do potentially in the next few days. But so Mo, I'll start with you with Manchester United.
Yeah.
What does Mourinho need to do to fix any problems they may have in the sort of early parts of the season?
Resign. that's what he needs to do.
Realistically,
sign Toby Alderweireld and like start beating up Ed Woodward until he signs a winger as well. Or a wing back, whatever. Basically, if they don't sign a winger, they need to play 3-5-2. They can't play 4-3-3 without a right winger. And assuming they're not going to get one because Willian now looks happy to stay at Chelsea, and Rebic has gone quiet, and Perisic is only talking about going to Bayern Munich. So assuming there's no right winger on the market, they need to sign a wing back, a left wing back, really. They need to get Toby Alderweireld. That's going to be huge, but it's not going to be enough to get United closer to City. They needed two or three other signings to really sort and a whole new focus and purpose. And from the coach, and what we've seen from preseason is not that. He's been whiny, he's been moany, these aren't my players, I don't like them, I don't want to be here, take me home, Mum. You know, he's just been whinging like a little baby, and that doesn't indicate a manager that is ready to take his team forward. Like, even if United had gotten a left back, gotten a centre back, gotten a right winger, he's still, if he's talking like this, which, I mean, it's partly because he hasn't got those players, but fair enough. You know, look, there's structural problems at United. This is very obvious. Ed Woodward is a brilliant executive at getting marketing deals, at arranging a football team, not so good. You know, there's problems all over the place at United, in the boardroom and in the coaching and the dugout. But I think you have to look at Mourinho. He should be doing so much better than what he has. The team they put out against Bayern Munich in the last three preseason friendly was quite a good team. And if you watch that game, it was, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the worst things. They played United for five minutes. You're thinking, okay, United are in this. Good, good, good. And then literally the 85 minutes of the game, United were just defending. And it's like, it's a preseason friendly. Are you defending a 0-0 in a pre? What is wrong with you? And it's just everything wrong with United. Look, then yes, they need a centre-half. They really need a centre-half because then they can play 3-5-2. And then that will mitigate some of their terribleness of their fullbacks. And that will give them, you know, the best sort of platform to succeed. You give Alexis Rashford, number 10 Rashford now, up front with Lukaku. That will be good. 3-5-2 is probably the best way to go. So they need a centre-half for that to happen. Ideally, they get a wing-back or a winger as well. Not going to happen, though, really, realistically. So what they can do realistically, you know, obviously, Mourinho should resign. But realistically, they just get a centre-back. And, you know, just someone just tell Mourinho, look, be nice to Paul. He's the best player in the team. Be nice to him. Because, you know, honestly, I do think Mourinho will pick a fight with Pogba and get sacked before Christmas. That's what I think is going to happen. And you can see it already being something like Mina Ryla's trying to get him to go to Barcelona. Just because it's like, this guy doesn't appreciate you. Let's get out of here. I don't think United will sell, but I think United will, just like with Martial, they'll be like, well, we're not selling Paul Pogba with Jose. Are you crazy? You know, he's our best player. So I think Pogba will stay because United's hierarchy aren't that stupid. I think Mourinho will get upset about not getting all the players. He'll pick a fight with Pogba, pick a fight with the owners and get sacked before Christmas. But
nice, concise overview.
Yeah.
How about Chelsea, Jake?
I think the difference between Conte and Sarri is so stark that to expect anything to happen positively in the first season is wishful thinking. So I think obviously next 2019-2020 will be their sort of, that's when you have to judge Chelsea. This year is all about that process of changing from a counter-attacking deep set 3-5-2, even 3-5-1-1 into a possession dominant 4-3-3. And you can't really get much different to that. So obviously Courtois going Abel having to find a goalkeeper. It looks like they're going to go buy a goalkeeper that won't be suited to Sarri's football. So I expect a lot of goalkeeping mistakes and sort of calamitous own goals. So I think Chelsea, the appointment is right. It's just the difference is so stark, as I said, that to expect anything from this season, they might absolutely wash someone 7-0 at one point and you'll be like, wow, yeah. A glimpse into the future. But you saw how far off they were against Man City. There's still massive work to be done. I believe it will be done, but we're not going to see any fruits of that labour in this season.
Okay, so we've looked at the big six there in terms of top four and the title challenges. We certainly look forward to the Premier League kickoff. Okay, next up, we're going to have a reasonably brief look at the new boys in the Premier League. Obviously, a bit different these days. These teams are coming up and spending lots of money and they don't want to just survive, potentially. Going to come to sort of each of you with one of the promoted teams, starting with Wolves. I'll come to you, Mo. Yeah. Obviously, a lot of good transfer business. They were very good last season. How do you think they'll get on? And are you looking forward to seeing them play?
Oh, very much so. Jorge Mendes has worked his magic with this team. They've signed Rui Patricio. I still can't believe Rui Patricio plays for Wolves.
It's 2018.
Blowing my mind. There's Willy Boly. They've got some good talent. Diego Jota. They've attached a lot of good talent to what was already a pretty decent time. They've jettisoned some players who helped them get promoted, indicating that they know that, look, they got us promoted, but they're not going to help us in the Premier League. And Ruben Neves is a brilliant player. Ruben Neves is a Champions League level player. Like, he was playing in the Championship last year, it made no goddamn sense whatsoever. He's going to adapt brilliantly to the Premier League, I think. And you'd think that alone would be good. Adding all this great talent to Ruben Neves, fine. There's now rumors they're going to sign Adama Traore, which to me is the most exciting thing ever. Because Adama Traore is a pure take on Merchant. You know, he could dribble anyone in the world. He could dribble, the Flash. You know, he's incredible. Put the ball at his feet, he can go past anybody. Can't touch him. End product, it's not so good.
You know, not there yet. Is
but
it?
What is end product?
Well, exactly. That literally is what I'm saying. The thing is, right, with Borough, all Borough did was they defended in two deep blocks of four. They hoofed the ball to Adama and said, "Go on, mate, carry us up the field," and he'd do it. He'd carry them 50 yards up the field every time. Beat two or three guys, and then he'd cross to nobody because there'd be nobody supporting him. So he'd just sort of like whip a ball in the area and hope something happened. With Wolves, he'll start higher up the pitch, first of all, because Wolves will have the ball more. He'll get the ball, he'll be able to then conserve his energy just to beat two or three guys, and then it'll be easier to put the ball in. Like, he won't be as tired from running up the half the field. Put the ball into better areas, he'll have better teammates, that's the other thing. There'll be more teammates in the area to pass to. And you know, he's the kind of, we saw what Wilf Zaha did for Crystal Palace, right, last season and every season before that. You know, just this someone who can dribble and carry the ball upfield and is genuinely fearless is a game changer down the bottom half of the table, because usually those players don't play for those kind of clubs. You know, with all respect, they play for the top half clubs, right, the top six clubs, because they're elite dribblers, right, and they're technical skill players. You don't usually get those kind of players down in a dogfight. Are just as much game changers as the goal scorers, as the goal poachers, because it's like suddenly this team who can, you know, who has the ball can suddenly burst to life and actually just like obliterate someone. I mean, we've seen what Zaha can do for Palace. I think Adama Traore can do something similar for Wolves, and I think already they had a great team. I think they're going to finish top half. I think honestly they will. I think their team is so good. You know, their manager is a bit. Well, I mean, if he keeps his head, he can be a bit inconsistent. But I just think. They've got such a promising squad, full of so much talent. Once they get everyone adapted, Adama Traore and Rui Patricio in one team. I mean, come on, that's
definitely be exciting to watch.
Adama Traore's pass accuracy last season was lower than his dribble success rate, the fact that he completed 240 dribbles at an 80% rate is like genuinely just you don't see that.
Yeah,
you don't see that volume and that efficiency. So I agree there that he's going to be super fun if he does make that move.
Yeah, it's nice to see it. Wolves will certainly be interesting to watch and see. Yeah, top 10 is probably not out of the question at this stage, but if Fulham in a similar mode, Jake, I know you've been
top
impressed.
Six.
I know you've been impressed with their transfer business. You like obviously Sessegnon's there, and you hope he doesn't get wasted at left back. But
that was the thing is, like, they needed to. It was like, hold on, they bought Seri. Wow, great. What did Fulham do last season? Keep the ball, make loads of passes. Mm. What does Seri do? Keep the ball, make loads of passes, and make loads of really incisive passes. So they've like upgraded there. When were they really good last season? When they had a target man that was willing to battle shoulder to shoulder to every defender to give space to these passes. Mm-hmm. That was Mitrovic. Who did they buy?
Oh,
Mitrovic, the exact target man, who I feel like it's really odd that he's 24 years old. He looks weathered because he's always in these absolute wars with centre backs. So I think it's really a chance for him to prove that he is good. And it's obviously Newcastle sold him and then bought another target man, which is probably because Fulham wanted him, but that's sort of another story. And then they bought Schürrle, who is like he's Andre Schürrle. He assisted a World Cup winning goal. He's not a bad player. Mm. He's had his injury troubles, but anyone that plays for Bayer Leverkusen is pretty much a good player.
Yeah.
Toni Kroos, Vidal. Look where they are now. They've bought these players, but then the one thing you're worried about was like, wait, Sessegnon's playing pre-season at left back. Mm. We saw last season when he plays in up front, he's like Inzaghi, but a left winger and 17. So now he's 18. You don't want him to revert back. But what they've done is they've also bought Le Marchand from Nice, who is a left back or a centre back. He was playing centre back in pre-season, so you're still worried. Then they go and buy Alfie Mawson. There's your centre back. Le Marchand can move left. Now they're getting Callum Chambers on loan. So now they have three centre backs, and Alfie Mawson and Callum Chambers were a fantastic duo for England under-21s last season. Mm. Really good balance between the two. Alfie Mawson is, I think, doesn't get as much credit for his ability on the ball, maybe because he's playing in really defensive teams, and him and Chambers they're not the quickest defenders, but Chambers is so good in the air, which is really underrated. He is good on the ball. Mawson's really good on the ball. Fulham have built a team that, obviously, I don't believe they will get top six, and even top half will be a push because of the spread out quality in the league. Yeah. But Fulham they've improved their squad, and they've built on the philosophy that they had in the Championship. Mm. They haven't panicked in the Premier League and thought, quick, sign someone that scores 15 goals in the Premier League. They thought, what did we do well last season? Okay. We had a focal point. Let's buy him. We need to upgrade actual talent. We've bought a World Cup winner and one of Ligue 1's most sought-after players. And now we've bought players in defence to give us enough cover to use one of our most exciting talents in the position where he should play. So, yeah, Fulham, really excited to see what they can do. Again, in the same way, I think they might beat some teams quite heavily, but because of their style and because they're the new boys, they could also just be counter-attack blitzed by people like Bournemouth who will just seize on almost a naivety and quick. But yeah, Fulham are fun.
So Fulham and Wolves, definitely two teams to watch, and maybe are two teams that are thinking maybe beyond just staying up.
I would definitely pinpoint those two as try and follow them as closely as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just, we're going to come to you for sort of Peter, for Cardiff are probably a team that whenever you ask people who's going down, everyone's saying Cardiff plus two others probably. I don't know if you've got the relegation odds.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. Warnock's a sort of magician at getting teams up into the Premier League, not so much sort of, well, staying there himself, as you say. He's been sacked a number of times in the Premier League, and yeah, the right before the six favourites to be relegated, so there's some cause for some concern there. And as I mentioned, I think if they start the season on a bad note, then they're sort of recent Premier League history among sort of any recently promoted club tells us that Warnock might not be there for too long. I think, as you say, it's not very often you talk about, don't mean to dive out too much, but if you talk about teams being promoted, it's very rare that you talk about a team sort of breaking into the top half, let alone top four, which is top six, which is some conversations that you had around Wolves. They're 15-2 to be relegated, so I think they're relatively safe. And Fulham 15-8. So again, I wouldn't say some cause for concern for Fulham, but again, that's probably a fair price. But I think, yeah, as you say, Cardiff, they could be in some trouble, and I think I wouldn't go as far as saying whipping boys, but they'll be close to that. So 4-6 favourites to be relegated there.
Cool. So, certainly three welcome additions to that.
Yeah.
So
on Cardiff, just quickly, I was reading a preview done by Duncan Alexander, who's at the Opta and comes up with all those wacky stats. And Cardiff's pass accuracy last season was 59%. And it was just like...
like a bird.
And it was like, he put it in a really interesting way to look at it. It's like, again, this is sounds completely pretentious from me sort of thing, but if you did pass accuracy as how you'd get promoted, which you obviously don't, I know, Fulham and Wolves would still go up. Cardiff would have been like rock bottom. Mm. So I just think their style of play is completely like that against good, now they're going to face really good teams. Then they're just going to, it'll just be deep defensive and it'll be how many lucky draws can we get?
The thing is, they've signed championship players, which is always a worry to me, like to try and compete in the Premier League. They've signed championship. It's like, no, you need to sign Premier League players or at least championship players if you have a real vision. You have a real idea of what you want to do, and I don't think they have a real idea.
I think the funny thing we were saying about how Wolves sold the championship top assist maker in Barry Douglas, and they sold Ben Akinfobe because they realised the step was a bit different. Whereas Cardiff have almost consolidated, like, we're up this season, let's acquire all the championship talent, so when we go back down, we're going to be one of the best. It's like, it's quite a harsh, cynical way to look at it, but it seems like that.
And I think Warnock will enjoy having writing him off, though, won't he? That's his ideal role, isn't
he? He's going to be fun to have back, isn't he? He comes up
I think they'll pull off an impressive draw or win early in the season, and then that'll give everyone real hope. But I think ultimately they will go down.
Yeah, because it's a long season for them to compete, sort of the different squads around it. So we're gonna round stuff off with predictions. I don't know if you guys are ready for this. And it will come back in May. We'll do the kind of look back at.
Remember what you said.
Yeah, I'm always ready. I was wrong about. I picked Mohamed Salah starting the season last year, so I got that right.
We're gonna have a go through the top four in order and why we're gonna get the relegated trio and then maybe a sort of the player of the season. Who wants to start?
I'll go first. Why not?
I'm thinking so.
Yeah.
Reasonably brief because obviously we've discussed a lot of the top four teams. Yeah. But the top four in order, what
City
are you going
first
for?
Because they're the best team. They're still the best team. Pep Guardiola is the best manager in the world. Very good. Liverpool second because I think they've got a fantastic squad. Got probably the second best manager in the world. I think they've got a great coach. Got a great atmosphere. Very, very much a progressive side. Third, I think United. I don't think they'll be good. I think he'll get sacked, and I think they'll pick up after that. But I think there'll be a distant third. I think Liverpool and City are going to be well ahead of everyone else this season. I think United will be a distant third, but I do think they'll be third. I think the reason they'll be third is purely because like I said, they'll sack Mourinho around the middle of the year, getting someone who isn't horrible, and pick up some momentum that way. And also, I just think ultimately, no matter how, even with Mourinho's nonsense, the overwhelming individual quality they possess in that team, Fred, Pogba, Romelu Lukaku, Alexis Sanchez looking very good, I think that will just see them over the line, get them so many points. And fourth, I think, honestly, toss up Spurs or Arsenal, you can pick whichever one I think, but I think Spurs, just because they're a very, very good team. Mm. And I think once they get over the initial problem of, like, all their players will be exhausted from the World Cup, I think they'll be very good.
Jake, your turn.
Okay, so luckily it's different, which is
I was gonna say.
Good. So in first, I've got defending champions, Man City, because they have got the most attractive, the most dominant style, and it's also now one of the most well-practiced, considering how many managerial changes we've had. And the fact that Aguero isn't guaranteed to start is just nuts. In second, I've got the net spenders in Liverpool. They've identified key areas. And they've brought in some exciting players, and their first 11 now is one of the strongest. So if they don't get second, they should be annoyed. In third, I've got the no spenders that we've already covered in Spurs. Mm-hmm. They are a great team, and they're better than the other three teams in the sort of that you would consider in top six. So I think that, as I said earlier, they're going to be sort of an island in third. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be as good because lack depth, but then they're going to be better than the other teams. In fourth, I've gone for Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And I think Emery will get Champions League football purely because of what I said. Despite their defence being bad, they should, if he does it well, outscore a lot of teams. I'm backing Aubameyang to get Golden Boot purely off the fact that he's found a duo with Lacazette. He can play left wing, he can play up front. Mesut Ozil is Mesut Ozil, so he's going to be teeing up a lot of chances. I really think they'll do it because of the goals. And it's more so because I think in fifth, Chelsea, the style of play is too different to implement in one season. They've got, it looks like Eden Hazard's going to stay, and I think he'll either be used as left wing or false nine. Mm. And I think he's going to have a huge season. and he'll do enough for Chelsea to, especially second half of the season when Sarismo and Saribor is embedded, then they'll kick on. But the first half is going to be a struggle, so I think it sets them in a bad way. And then sixth, I'd put Mourinho and Man United, because there's no way that second place last season is sustainable. Even if De Gea even has half a good season, you don't prevent as many, like, that was superhuman. I'm not saying that you shouldn't rely on it, but it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy of letting David De Gea save the ball. Man United, as we said, against Bayern Munich, it was a friendly, I know, but that was the pattern of every game last season. And I think with the added quality of the Premier League, not only the teams around Man United, but also the teams that we've spoken about before, Man United, I don't think, can sort of get away with having this negative outlook. When, as Mo said, they've got some really good players. If they use that and they try to implement their style on other teams, they'd do well. But I feel like from what I've seen in pre-season, from what I saw last season, despite them coming second, I don't think you can sustain that again. It's not repeatable, in my opinion. And they'll finish
it. Other teams have improved as well.
Yeah.
Peter, you got a top four prediction for us?
Yeah, so top two would be the same as you guys. I think City are just phenomenal. If they continue the way they were last season, they'll be almost impossible to beat for the league. Liverpool, the squad depth in there is, again, sublime, but I think there'll be a shade off City this season. Third, I think, might be slightly biased, but I'm going to go Chelsea. I think they're nowhere near competing for the league, but I think Sarri tactically is superb. I think, again, it looks like they're going to keep Eden Hazard, who I think, as I agree, I think he's going to have a great season. There's a few personnel issues in there as well, which I think they'll tidy up. And I think you'd be surprised. I think they'll actually play well. I think people are overlooking Chelsea slightly. And again, I'm going to put my neck on the line here, and I'm going to put Arsenal as fourth. I think as I say, that is my bet for them to finish. They're 2-1 to finish in the top four this season. I think Ozil is going to be a new player this season. I think Aubameyang is going to be settled into Premier League life now. And I think, was it Jake that mentioned there, when he partners up with Lacazette, I think that'll be a dangerous lineup for them as well. I agree. I think just as a Chelsea fan, I've seen it happen before with Mourinho. He moans, and you think it's kind of part of this wider PR stunt to kind of create a siege mentality, but actually it's just him being a misery. And it's not healthy for fans, it's not healthy for players, and it's not healthy for the manager himself. So I think United are starting off extremely badly, and even if he does get sacked, it's going to be a few months before he does so. So I think United are, by their standards, they're in trouble. And I would be backing them not to qualify for the Champions League.
Okay, so that's two out of three. I think United out of the top four. Interesting. Next up, relegated trio. Mo. Doesn't have to be in order, this one, I don't think.
Well,
I think three to go down.
I think Cardiff will go down. I think pretty much, obviously, they're going to go down. I think Warnock, I think, is obstinate enough that he'll get enough decent results in the first half of the season that will keep him in the job for the whole season, which is not what Cardiff want, really. They want him getting sacked as soon as possible. I think Cardiff will go down. I think Burnley, because I just think that they've done miracles last couple of years, last year especially. But this year, Europa League, juggling Europa League and league, we've seen this before. This takes down a lot of teams. Going on, it's easy for Burnley, not easy, but it's one thing to play like Burnley did, be tactically prepared for your opponents every week when you're only playing once a week, right? When you're not going on cup runs, you're playing literally 30, maybe 40 games a season. It's not easy, but it is. It's comparatively easy. Now they've got Europa League football, they're not going to be able to practice and train tactically ahead of the games at the Premier League. The weekend, they're going to be purely operating on rest. I think they're going to suffer enormously as a result. I think they'll get relegated. And I think the final team, probably, I don't know, Bournemouth, just because it's just... I just think Bournemouth, they always seem to be on the cusp of it. I should make it clear. For me, Burnley and Cardiff are the outstanding candidates. The third candidate could be a bunch of teams. Like Southampton haven't really signed the goal scorer that they need, but they've signed well elsewhere. So I think maybe they'll be okay. I think Bournemouth maybe just. Yeah.
Jake?
So Cardiff, I think, will finish bottom. Mm-hmm. And then I think Huddersfield are going down.
Yep.
Because although they have made some signings, again, in that preview I read, I couldn't remember the stat, and luckily it came up. They didn't score in 21 games last season. and they scored 28 goals in total, which is the joint fewest ever by a non-relegated side. Mm. So as I believe Man United isn't sustainable in terms of getting second,
yeah.
I don't think Huddersfield are going to be safe because mm-hmm. of that. Mm-hmm. Again, Wagner's doing great, but I just think with the added quality, I think that style is going to be found out maybe a bit more. And then for third, I'd say because of how abject everyone is towards the club, I think Newcastle are going to be struggle.
Mm. Especially if Rafa goes, yeah.
Yeah, because I think he is so close to just packing up, I think.
Yeah.
He, like, in pre-season, I'm worried about the club. I don't like what's going off the pitch, going on off the pitch, and you can see it on. So although they have made some decent signings still, but they're so like grasping at straws, they're probably fifth choice. He got Rondon in, which will be a big presence. He's a slight upgrade on Joselu, but yeah, I'm worried about Newcastle. And then around that, I actually don't think Southampton are going to do that great. Mm. And then maybe Palace, depending on who they sell. I still think the third one is open, but
yeah.
Huddersfield, I think not sustainable. Cardiff, because of what we've said.
Yeah. Would you go along with that, Peter? Is it Cardiff and two others? And if so, which two are you going for?
Yeah, I think Jake's going to think I'm copying him here, but I was going to say Cardiff 4-6 to go down, Huddersfield 6-5. I think Huddersfield, they've ridden their luck. They've had their fun in the sun in the Premier League. I think I can see them going down as well. And I was going to say, from what we've heard from you coming out of Newcastle, especially in the last sort of few days, 5-1, I think would be a great shout for them to be relegated. I was going to say it's a bit of a wild card bet for me. As you say, if they do keep Rafa, I think they'll have a chance. But we've seen it so many times in Newcastle where just as they think they've got their club back on the tracks, they kind of get derailed again. So my third one, which I turn the top, the sort of the bottom three, would be Watford at 2-1. Again, I just, for me, they're a bit of an excuse to sort of the poor description here. They're a bit of a sort of meh team, you know. I think they had a strike of luck getting Silver in last year. He obviously wasn't there for too much longer. I think again they're a bit of a yo-yo side, and Watford have been up. I think this is now the third season of the Premier League since being promoted. I just nothing about them excites me. I like Brighton, the way in which they're set up to sort of, they're set up as a Premier League team now. They've got a good manager in Houghton. I think Fulham will be okay, 15-8 for them to get relegated. But I think Watford 2-1, Huddersfield 6-5, and Cardiff 4-6 will be my three to be relegated. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Newcastle unfortunately get relegated, or 5-1 now. And I wouldn't be surprised if that shortens in the next week or so.
I'll say this for Newcastle, I think Rondon's going to do very well for them. I think he's very much a Rafa Benitez kind of striker.
Didn't do very well for West Brom.
No, he didn't. But I think he'll do very well for Newcastle. I think he could almost, he'll become a cult figure up there as well with the way he plays football. And I think he could almost, not single-handedly save them. I just think once Rafa Benitez's sides have a striker that works for the team, it doesn't mean they score goals necessarily, because Rafa Benitez's sides have always scored goals from more of the attacking midfield line than the striker line. But once they have a striker that works for the team and the rest of the team clicks behind that striker, that could be transformative. So I just think Rondon was a very, very important signing for Newcastle. I think he could, that could be the difference between them going down and them not going down.
And then one little thing on Watford, they have actually mastered the manager bounce.
They have.
Because I don't think anyone's stayed in the job more than 8 months anyway. So I feel like they're going to start really poorly, but then they're just going to find the exact guy to get them sort of a quick burst of points and maybe just keep them above sea level.
So I'm sure Big Sam's waiting to see which job he's going to get first out of all these lot.
Cardiff manager probably.
Yeah, I suspect so. Just finally, this is a bit more, you know, it's kind of picking who's the player of the season we're going to go for and the flop of the season. Mo, who's, do you think is going to be the stand-up player in the Premier League, and who do you think is going to maybe disappoint?
Player of the season, Naby Keita. You know, he's just made for the Premier League, isn't he? I mean, I did think Alexis Sanchez, because I did think he's actually going to have a phenomenal season, because I think he looks like he's shaken off whatever malaise was affecting him last season. He looks phenomenal in pre-season for United. And United have looked terrible. So the fact that he's looked amazing, considering the fact that his teammates have been rubbish, I think says everything. I think he's going to have a really... And as Arsenal fans can attest to, he can play brilliantly and the team will still suck.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to have an excellent individual season. I think the fact is Liverpool will be much better than United. I think individually, I think, again, they'll have the stand-up guy. I think last season they had Mohamed Salah. This year it'll be Naby Keita. I think he'll be Gerrard-esque in his ability to take the Premier League by storm, and it'll blow both people's minds, because the mainstream press and mainstream doesn't really have any idea about how good this guy actually is, because no one watches Red Bull Leipzig. RB Leipzig, sorry. And I think he'll have the edge of being a surprise almost. Mm. I think so. Keita will be the player of the season.
How about flop? Or is that hard? It's too hard.
No. I just don't want anyone to kill me. Eden Hazard. I think he's not. Oh, I think.
Well,
I think,
you've just signed your own death warrant.
I think he's not got his move to Real Madrid that he wants. I think he's going to sulk his way through the season. Sarri's going to ask him to do way too much, and he's not going to want to do it because he's just going to sulk his way through the season. I'd love it if Hazard clicked with Sarri, because I think potentially he could be unreal in Sarri's system playing the Insigne role. I just think it's not going to happen for him. I think, but probably because I think actually Sarri might end up having to play him up front the false line because Morata's clearly not up to
look
it.
Look what happened to Mertens.
And then, look what happened to Hazard when he played false line for Chelsea last
year. For Conte. Me up there.
But yeah, no, I just think Hazard's not got his big move away that he wanted. I think it's a hot, let them wrong. I know it's a risky shout. It's a big shout.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
But I think
it's gotta be bold of these things.
I have a feeling that he might sulk his way through the season just because he's done it before.
Oh, yeah. Jake, player of the season.
I can't think straight now.
Eden Hazard.
So as I said, I don't think he will be player of the season, but I expected him to do really well.
Yeah.
Because he's been craving an attacking manager, but obviously, as I said, the change is too much that maybe he won't be player of the season. I was going to say Naby Keita, which is boring because I know we both said it for the exact same reasons. Mm. Other players that I think, in terms of, so as I said before, I think Aubameyang is going to get a golden boot. I think.
Yeah, I agree with that, by the way. I think that's a good shout.
So that's sort of to give a sort of different opinion. And then flop, we haven't really touched on West Ham, considering they've spent a lot of money.
Yeah, true.
And in the same way that I obviously seem disgusted by Eden Hazard, Mo's Eden Hazard opinion, people might not like me for my West Ham opinions, but it seems like they're just collecting players.
Yeah,
for not much of a reason. And one person that I feel is maybe a bad signing and could flop in terms of what's expected of him is Yarmolenko, because people have a knowledge of Yarmolenko from his exploits in Ukraine, which no one watches. He's got a good record for the national team. He was always good on Football Manager on FIFA, which informs quite a lot of mainstream opinion, worryingly perhaps. But so I feel like not only have they signed him, they've got Anderson, Arnautovic, Hernandez, they're linked with Lucas Perez. There's a 50 million euro buyout deal for Celta Vigo's Maxi Gomez on the table. So where does Yarmolenko even play now? So he's my flop. And then one player that I think will go really big is Richarlison.
Yeah,
that's someone I've just remembered him now, to be different to Keita. Richarlison is exactly the player Everton have been missing, and Marco Silva loves him. They'll funnel everything into him. He's actually had a rest rather than playing 70 games in a year. So I expect Richarlison to go big, even if Everton aren't great themselves.
Okay. I just point out, I think Yarmolenko is a better shout in Eden Hazard for flop of the season.
No, don't backtrack now.
No, I'm not backtracking.
It's not as controversial.
I'm just agreeing with Jake. I think that's actually a very good shout. I can't understand why they bought him.
Well, the Dortmund sold him after a year, so I think that
says a lot. Yeah, Peter, who do you think is the standout player in the Premier League this season?
Yeah, I'm going to have to completely disagree with them. I think Eden Hazard, although he probably did want to move away to Real Madrid, I think he'll just kind of dust himself down and get on with it. I'm not sure how Sarri would approach the Europa League, but I'm sure he rests some key players in that competition if he needs to, which I think will keep him fresh. I think he actually has a point to prove, and whether he's playing at Chelsea or Real Madrid next season, he will be wanting to prove to the world of football how good at football he is. So I think we'll see a decent season from him. My flop, I'm going to stick with Chelsea again, and although it may not be the most original sort of innovative thought, I think Alvaro Morata. He scored some nice headers last season, but that was about it, and I think he's going to get found out this season. Whether it's him or Giroud leading the line for Chelsea, I don't think that's either of those players is significant enough or even sort of talented.
Blasphemous on Olivier Giroud.
But I think Morata's going to sort of fade into the dust this season at Chelsea, I'm afraid.
Cool. That's a good roundup, I think, of all what's going to happen. Eden Hazard has some mixed views on him. We'll see how
it's funny that
develops.
He was picked as a flop and also the best player of the season. That says it all, really.
Yeah, it says a lot. So it probably says a lot about how unpredictable the Premier League is, I guess. And we look forward to the big kickoff and then the months that follow.
Friday Night Lights.
That's it. That's just about all we've got time for today. So thanks to Mo.
Thanks to you.
Thanks very much. Thanks to Jake.
Yeah, nice one.
And thanks to Peter again for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Always a pleasure.
Speak to you again soon. Cheers.